Before we dive in, I would just like to say a quick prayer. Heavenly Father, as we open your word for a few minutes and explore a little more about your love for us and our role and our love for one another, I ask that we would see elements of our lives that need changing or rebooting, that we would see elements of our lives that we can continue to fertilize and water and grow in, and that ultimately, Lord, our experience with you today would transcend this moment and become a part of our lives. Thank you for hearing our prayers this morning. In your name, amen. I apologize. At least one person in this room that I shared this story with last night, so spoiler alert, but we're not going to end there. How many of you guys were ever in Pathfinders? Okay. How many of you don't know what Pathfinders is? Okay, all right. A couple hands. That's okay. Pathfinders is like our version, Seventh-day Adventist version of the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. And so I enjoyed Pathfinders. I loved Pathfinders. And when I was a young Pathfinder, I kind of got into pin collecting. Anybody familiar with this whole thing? How many of you have pins? Okay, very good. How many of you have pins that you just are done with? You're like ready to get rid of them? See me after. Because I love the pin trading business of the Pathfinder portion of things. In fact, really, that's really why I continued to go to Pathfinders. I just love the pins. And as I've gotten older, I've continued to kind of make my collection more robust. You know, if I go to a national park, I'll look and see if there's a pin there, and I'll add it to my collection. I have a big cork board, actually, that I got from Amanda Pickett. She donated it to me. She didn't know that was what it was going to be for, but she's like, I don't have a need for this piece of junk anymore. You want it? I accepted. All my pins are on it now. It's fantastic. So I continue to collect pins. And with Oshkosh, which is a big camp out coming up in next year, you know, the pin trading starts to grow. People start designing pins, and it becomes like a big thing. And so the other night, I had little to nothing to do, and I was like, man, and this is like a month ago now, I was like, you know, I'm going to go on eBay and see if there's any other pin dorks out there who are maybe selling pins or putting some things. So I did a search, you know, Pathfinder this or SDA that, and I came across this cool little pin. It is a Three Angels Message 70th Anniversary Collector's Pin. And it was like $2 for the starting bid. And it was like $2.95 for shipping. Come on. So I decide, you know what? I'm willing to pay $6 for this pin. So I enter my bid. And about the time I enter my bid, I get a little alert that says, so-and-so has bid $3. You're still the highest bidder. And I'm like, got that right. All right. Then I get another alert. So-and-so has bid $4. You are still the highest bidder. I'm like, yes. I get another alert. $5. Now, this is like 2 weeks. The auction was 2 weeks. 2 weeks for this hat pin. That's dumb. But anyways. Then I get another alert. $5. You're still the highest bidder. And I'm like, you know what I'm talking about. Okay. I get another alert. $6. You are still the highest bidder. And I was like, me? I'm still the highest bidder? How's that possible? Then I get another alert, $7. But you are still the highest bidder. I'm like, oh, there's got to be some mistake here. So I go back and check my bidding history. As it turns out, if you're not reading carefully, 600 doesn't equal $6. And so, so the terror started to fill my soul, and I thought to myself, I'm going to have to confess this business to my wife. That's how that's going to go down. So, I mean, we're 2 weeks into this. I'm already still the highest bidder at, you know, $7, $8 now. finally, I turn off alerts off my phone. I'm just like, oh, man. And somewhere in my heart, I said, you know, if somebody else wants this so badly, just pray, please, Lord, don't let them bid like $5.95 for this pen. You know, if I get it for like $100 or $150, maybe I'll send a message to the seller and just say like, hey, can you see where I'm at here? Could we? And so finally, I get the alert 2 weeks later. And I want you guys to know I am now the proud owner of a $64.95 collector's pen. In fact, I have it here with me. I took it out of its golden case. You can't even see it, for crying out loud. I mean, like, it's so stinking little. But it's pretty cool. It is a vintage little pen with three angels on it, and it says 70 right there. They weren't lying. So I do. I like pens. And even though this is my most expensive pen, it is not my most valued pen. I have another pen here. It is Georgia Cumlin Pathfinders, and it says, "Thank you for 25 years of service, John Swofford." Any of you guys know who John Swofford is? John Swofford, he's a personal friend of mine. You know, when he got his, you know, like, doctorate, kind of big wig ship thing, you know, I was eager to talk to him and celebrate with him. I mean, he's a great man. And so this is like a really cool pen. But this pen, as close as I am and love John Swofford and everything he's offered, Pathfinders and youth and everybody around the world, even this isn't my most valued pen. My most valued pen, which I don't bring with me because I don't take it off my cork board, are my dad's old military pens from when he was a paratrooper and has some of his bars and things like that. Those stay on my pen board. And I don't, you know, just for fear that I might lose those and somebody would put them on eBay and I'd have to bid for them again, I don't bring them off the board. They're my most valued pens. And we have an employee, I get to do landscaping and work with my hands. We have an employee who had decided they were getting out of the pen business. Jason, I know you like pens. Would you like to buy my pens from me? I was like, sure, let's see what you got. And so she brought these pens. She's like, this is what I have. And I saw she had a pen there that was an Oshkosh. They have this little pen trading class that you can take at Oshkosh. It's really stupid. But back in 99, I graduated from it. And and I got a little pen. It's like a little scroll. It's like a little scroll pen, and it says you graduated from this pen trading class. And she had one from 2004, 5 years later. You got to do it every 5 years. And when I saw her pen, it reminded me, I don't know where my graduating pen is from the most important graduation of my life. And so I thought to myself, like, oh, where is my pen? And so for a second, I went and opened a drawer. I knew I used to keep some pens in, and it wasn't there. And it's gone. And, like, it feels incomplete to me. And I'm a totalist. Like, if we're playing chess and I know I've got this game in the bag, you will have no players except for your king left when I'm done with you. You know what I'm saying? If you say to me, Jason, do you collect this? I say, yes, and I have every one. I mean, like, I love cuckoo clocks, and they're not cheap. But I want more, okay? I'm into them. They're really neat. They're cool. I like guitars. You know, you name something, and I'm all in. Pens is the same way. My pen collection is incomplete. I love tools. Look at this. I love these tools right here. This is like the bane of my existence. Do you see this business right here? I have lost one of these Torx sockets. And like this pen now that I know is missing from my collection, you know, I haven't stopped using the rest of my Torx sockets. It's not like I'm throwing them out. But every time I get in my truck where I knew I used it last, my eye is kind of out for it, right? So for a few minutes, I want you guys to just turn with one another and confess your obsession or your regret or whatever it is over something that you have lost. Whatever that may be. It's no longer with you. That's kind of stuck in your mind. Maybe so far in the past, you've kind of let it go, but there's something there that you've kind of lost. Just discuss for a minute. I'm sure several of you have maybe shared some interesting stories, are still sharing. I don't want to cut you off too much, but I just want to take an opportunity to kind of focus in about this concept of the lost. With Father's Day just behind us, I thought it might be a good opportunity to kind of dive in to the story of the prodigal son. You guys are well familiar with that story, I'm sure, and maybe even the few little stories that lead up to it. And so I want us to take a look at what that looks like today, because Jesus is sharing some things about the lost. And I recognize when you're talking like pin trading and, you know, maybe even a tool, different things, they carry different weight and value for us. And maybe some of you shared that you'd lost some things of great value. It could be relationship or whatever that looks like. And some of you may have said, yeah, you know, I lost my gum in the chicken yard, and I thought I found it two or three times before I did. But, you know, whatever it is that you lost, there's a range of things that we lose and no longer have with us that have different values. And so Jesus wanted to address that. And so as we kind of look, especially in light of Father's Day being recently, I want to take a look at how God feels about the lost, and then kind of how God feels about that reuniting experience. It's found in Luke 15, so if you brought your script, and I hope you did, I'd like you to follow along. Luke 15, verse 3 here, Jesus starts with these little parables, and it says, "Then Jesus told them this parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Does he not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully," listen to this, "he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, 'Rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep.' I tell you that in the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent." This one sheep becomes the focal point. And that doesn't mean all the other sheep no longer have value. Guess what? Because I cannot find this one pin, I have not thrown out my pin collection. That's not how that works. They are all still quite valuable to me. Hanging on my wall, I'm proud of them, but I know they are there. I know they are secure. But yet my mind now will be somewhat consumed as I open a drawer, an old box. Somewhere deep inside of me, I'll be wondering, will I find this pin? As I work in my shop, will I find this one little socket that burns a hole in my heart on a regular basis? And then I ask myself, is there someone in my life that holds the same meaning to me as these things? Have I lost a person? Is there a sheep out there that I have lost touch with, that is no longer a part of my group, that I'm not reaching out to anymore, and yet my heart is not pricked by their absence? When I was in high school, we had a guy that came to our school, and I mean, man, he was a dork, okay? I mean, like, worse than a pin trading dork. I mean, like, so dorky. I mean, no social abilities whatsoever, it seemed. And my best friend said to the group of us one day, he said, "Hey, do you think we could make this guy cool?" And I was like, "No, we cannot. There's no possible way." He's like, "No, I think we could do it. I think we can make him cool." And so we decided, like, okay, we're going to include him. We'll start to hang out with him. He'll start to be part of our crew. And so we invited him in. We started asking him to do stuff with us and hang out with us. And I mean, man, he was so... So like right now you hear like the AC is making a certain noise. It has some kind of decibel rating, you know. It's making like a... If he was to hear that right now, he would start harmonizing with it with like a... This is the kind of stuff he did. Car engine, you're driving along. Like, come on, man. We just stop that. Okay? But over time, he started to be part of our group. And some of the things that were so ultimately socially awkward about him, he started to lose those things. And you know what's crazy about us too is some of the things that really grated on our nerves started becoming less important to us as well as we began to value this person more and more. There was this meeting in the middle where this one person who was not part of the 99 was being welcomed into part of the 99. And here's the crazy thing about this story. Before we get into the portion of the prodigal son, here's the crazy thing about this story. Rightly so, we hear this story and we understand that this is the story of Jesus. If it was only for one, Jesus would have made the sacrifice, right? Rightly so, we assume that. But that's not what this story says. This story does not say that Jesus has 99 sheep. And if one of them goes missing, he would go out and get it and gladly, whether it's because of social risk, would put that person on his back and bring them home. It does not say that. What it says, and maybe some of you already knew this, maybe a lot of you are smarter than me, it says, then Jesus told them a parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep. See, this is actually not a story about Jesus going and getting people who are lost. This is a story where Jesus is reminding us to go and find people who have slipped through the cracks. To begin reaching out once again to people who are not part of our 99 anymore. I mean, we're here. A lot of us come and go, and maybe some of this is our first time or it's first time back in a while. I'm not trying to get into the detail of every single person here right now, but there are people out there who have just faded away. And my question to you is, like our friend in high school, I mean, my best friend said, gladly, we will put this individual on our shoulders and socially bear the burden of this dork until he is part of our group again. That's what he said. So before we get to the prodigal son, Jesus is saying, like, hey, look, there is a father out there, but it's not just him. He's not the one going after the 99. And philosophically and theologically, it makes sense, but it wasn't what that parable was about. The parable was reminding people. And why did Jesus even start by saying this? Let's go to verse 1. It says, in chapter 15, verse 1, it says, now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathered around to hear him. But the Pharisees and teachers of the law muttered, this man welcomes sinners and eats with them. It's likely that Jesus heard this muttering. Because there is muttering, man. I mean, there are people that are just unpalatable. Sometimes that's why they fall out. That's why they fall through the cracks. We don't like them for whatever reason, because they're annoying or they're not good at the games we play. They're not in our, you know, they don't make funny jokes. They're the ones that are laughing through their own jokes. And you're like, ha, 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 yeah, I know, that's funny, good, get it over with. I mean, there's a reason sometimes that the one falls away from the 99 and we just let them go. Because we don't see the value in them. We forget the value in them. So Jesus doesn't stop there. See, he's told these Pharisees, like, look, everyone has value. You guys can't just say these people have value and these people don't. And so he takes it to the next level. He says in verse 8, or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses. Now, this is something people understand, right? People get money. Like, the world runs on these finances. Suppose this woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Does she not light a lamp and sweep the house and search carefully until she finds it? See, now he says, like, check this out. The thing that you're saying doesn't have value, that's not how this goes. Everyone has value. And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, rejoice with me, I have found my lost coin. In the same way I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. And Who are the people going out looking? Is it God here going out and looking? Yeah, very well could be. But who is he telling this story to? Who is he saying it's about? If it's you that have lost, would you not do this? Would you not gladly seek this person out? Put them on your back, whatever the weight may be, and bring them home. Yeah, but you know, I don't have time. I work 10 hours a day, and then I got a kid and a wife. No, you would leave the 99. How about that coin when you recognize, oh, there is value in this person? My bank is cheated because they are missing. My worth is less because they're missing. You know, I read this book about the psychology of connection. And I've shared this with many people. I may have even set it up here before. Did you know that when somebody leaves a group, they say not only do you miss that person, but you actually miss the person that you are because of their influence. It's like this sword that cuts in all directions. Not a double-edged sword where part of it's good and part of it's bad, but a sword that cuts in all directions. Not only do you miss them as the individual that they are, but the person that they make you when they're around, you no longer have. The laughter that you shared, or the jokes that you tell, or the inside connections, the memories, that's gone. When one of the 99 is lost, when one of the 10 coins is lost, we are cheated of our whole worth. Part of it is missing. And so before we get into this last little section, I want to throw this back out to you again. And I want you to be honest. It could be a family member, a friend. Maybe you don't have somebody. I don't know. Maybe you haven't put the thought to it. But I want to give you another few minutes to turn back and say, who have you lost? That if you could do it right now, you'd go and throw them on your shoulders and they would be back here with you today. I recognize that the depth of that particular question for your tables may be something that you want to make eye contact with somebody and just say, hey, I'd love to keep talking about this later. I'd love to hear more. And so maybe today you guys will have lunch together, or you'll just sit and talk afterwards, and that's good too. Because at some point I want us to think about how do we keep it in our minds, those missing people, and continue to reach out to them, continue to be willing. So then Jesus continues. He says, okay, I've kind of laid out what your role is in the missing. I've kind of laid out the value of what the missing is worth. Now I want to talk to you about how it feels to be reunited. He starts talking about the dad now, right? He says, Jesus continued, there was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, Father, give me my share of the estate. So he divided his property between him. And that, like, this is like a rude son, right? This is like you going before your parents pass away and saying to them, I value you less than my inheritance. Cough it up. Pretty cold. But the father does it. Gives it to the son. Not long after that, the younger son got together all that he had. He set off for a distant country and there squandered his wealth with wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in the whole country and he began to have need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of the country and who sent him to the fields to feed the pigs. You know, as a kid, and maybe some of you will resonate with this, as a kid I was told, see, bad friends will tear you down. take all your money, and then when you're out of luck, you know, they'll be gone. They've got nothing. But you know what? As I got older and I read this, I was like, this doesn't say anything about friends. Because when famine strikes, and whatever famine looks like, it doesn't really have to do with relationship, necessarily. Famine affects us all. If there's no food, no amount of money can buy it. If there's no food, it affects everybody the same. And it's true. There's lots of biblical evidence to say that our connections with people can either build us up or tear us down. But that's not what it says here. What this says here, though, as we read on, it explains it a little different. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. So then he came to his senses. Now, this is to suggest that this young man had lost his mind. That he was not thinking clearly. His mind was so self-absorbed. And by the way, sometimes we lose one of the 99 because they've lost their mind. They don't recognize the value of being part of the 100 either. And what this guy is saying here, what Jesus is saying about this guy is it says this, when he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired men have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. When he came to his senses, he realized, not that he had gone and made bad friends and squandered all his wealth. When he came to his senses, he realized, I am too far away from my family. And that doesn't mean necessarily proximity all the time. Sometimes people just go. They want to change. They want to be different. And, you know, in the time of famine, we have to have our family. And whatever famine that looks like. Sometimes it's spiritual famine. You find yourself working in an environment where you are the only one trying to survive spiritually. Have you also alienated yourself from your family? And that's not to say that all of us have perfect families. Some of us don't have dads that we can return to in the same way that this is describing. But maybe we have a friend who was like family to us that we are no longer near. Or maybe we have a community like this that some days we feel like we're out on an island, and instead of returning to the strength of the family, we just try to exist in the famine. We do other things. We try to fill the time, and we hope that the famine affects us less and less over time, but it doesn't. At some point, we have to come to our senses. When he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired hands have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like your hired men. So he got up and went to his father. This is desperation talking here. And you can tell he's still a little out of his mind because fathers aren't like that. I've seen it before when a friend of mine or somebody that I knew has gone completely off the rails. I've never seen a father that's been like, forget that, when they come to their senses and want to be home. I'm not saying there's not a Hitler or two out there. But fathers know deep down in their hearts that their love is always there and waiting. And so he got up and went to his father. And while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. You know, this is the kind of another thing that I felt like I always heard, like, that the father in this story would go and walk out, like, to the edge of his property and just day after day. I don't know if that's realistic. I mean, it says the father had other sons. The father had servants and a whole world of things that he had to care for. I would imagine it's a lot like my sockets. God still has to be about his business because there's a lot of people that haven't left the 100 that he's still loving and caring for and actively engaged with. But somewhere in his mind is this empty spot where no matter what he's doing, his eyes are ready to reconnect with those that are missing. Regardless of the job and the responsibility and the connection and the relationship, deep down in the depth of his psyche, the Father is still waiting to see that one socket reappear. Always with his periphery ready in the horizon to see that connection, hopeful of the return. And my question is, are we part of the return? Are we also actively out seeking, ready to carry those people home? Who are we thinking of right now where we have dropped the ball in reaching out? I can think of a few. Shamefully, I could give you a list right now. But while he was still far away off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. And ran to his son. He threw his arms around him and kissed him. I mean, this is crazy, right? I experienced this personally once. My good friend Jesse and I, this is not a big part of the story, but we left for a year to go do mission work. And while we were gone, we decided, man, wouldn't it be fun to show up at home early? And we didn't realize the plans we had wrecked. My dad and mom had planned to rent the McDonald Road bus and come down to the airport with family and friends and like do a big welcome. I didn't know anything about that, but Jesse and I thought, man, it would be a pretty cool kick if we contacted somebody in the States, changed our tickets, came home early and just surprised people wherever they were at, whatever they were doing. They wouldn't even know it, right? And, oh man, it turned out better than I could ever imagine because we contacted Judy Winters. Some of you may know her. We were friends with her. Contacted her. She said, sure, I'll come pick up. She came, picked us up from the airport, and we were headed home. First, we were going to stop at my house because Jesse lives up in Bristol. So we were headed home on Ottawa-Ringgold Road. It was later in the evening, about time, a little after when kind of people get off of work. So we're headed down. Judy Winters is driving us, me and Jesse, Judy Winters, in our car, or in her car, on Ottawa-Ringgold Road. And I'll never forget, you know, my dad is a very aggressive driver. I'm also a very aggressive driver. I get that from him. The whole family attributes that to his influence in my life. Thank you, Dad, for your inheritance. And so we're driving along, and I see a car coming fast behind us, coming up on us on Ottawa-Ringgold Road. It comes out. It passes us. I mean, like we are standing still. And I look over. And lo and behold, who is passing us? My mother. Oh, yeah. This was one of the best days of my life because never again did she tell me to drive slower. So she pulls into home. We pull in behind her. I mean, it's this big celebration. You know, I hardly look the same. I got a big beard and long hair. You know, I don't know what I look like. Probably like the Jack Lynx commercial guy. And so I said, where's Dad? She said, he's playing racquetball. So we go over. He was playing at the McKee Employee Recreation Center at the time, and I go in there, and we come in, and you know, you got the big glass at the racquetball courts, right? And my dad, his back is to me because he's getting ready to take a serve from the other player. His back is to me. And the ball gets hit around for a few minutes, and then the ball becomes dead, and it's his turn to serve, right? And so he goes up to the line with the ball in his hand, and he turns around to check to see if his opponent is ready for his serve. And out of the corner of his eye, he sees me. And I can't imagine I even looked like myself. As burly as I looked, out of the corner of my eye, of his eye, he sees me. And he whips off his glasses. And he throws down the ball and paddle, and hands in the air, he yells out, "My son!" After this year of separation, and man, he didn't even think I was dead, you know? He knew I was coming home. His world that he was just regularly living, But in this void in his mind, his eye was always out for his son, even though he knew not to expect me. Until some later date, he turns, he throws open the racquetball court. We embrace. See, this is what God is waiting for his family. This is how the reunion looks and feels. Then the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. The father's like, just shut up, kid. Haven't you learned a thing? The father said to his servants, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and a sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate, for this son of mine that was dead, he is alive again. He is lost, but he was found. And so they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, not quite the end of the story, meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near to the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked, what's going on? He says, your brother has come home. Your brother has come home, right? He replied, and your father has killed the fatted calf because of him. He is safe and sound. The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out to plead with him as well. Did you know that some of us who are still part of the 99 behave like we are lost? We come here, we fellowship, we talk, we share a few things, but somewhere something is missing in our relationship with the Father. I don't know what that is. It may be a great thing, it may be a small thing, but I encourage you to search your soul right now and figure out what separates us from the Father even when we're present. The older brother says, but when he answered his father, look, all these years I have been slaving for you. See, that's his picture of what his relationship was like with his father. I've been slaving for you. It's a sad reality for this poor guy. And I never disobeyed your orders, yet you never gave me even a goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when, and check this out, the servant had said, your brother is home. Check what this guy says out. He says, but this son of yours. Interesting, right? He had separated himself. I once remember being mean to my mother as a kid. And my dad didn't come to me and say, hey, if you're ever mean to your mother again, you'll be in trouble. He kind of kicked me out of the family and said, hey, if you are ever mean to my wife again, you are done. That was his message to me. And I realized, oh, I'm not very important. Not as much as I thought I was anyways. But that term, the placing of people in the right location. And so this brother says, this son of yours, not my brother, but this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, come home, you kill the fatted calf for him. And then the man says, my son, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours, he puts the value back into what family means. This brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. As I read this, my heart is pricked. What changes do I need to be making in reaching out to make this a reality for the people who slip through the cracks? And I invite you to parse your lives today as well. And maybe begin to ask that. What do I need to do to be reaching out again to reunite people with the family? To put them on my back and bring them home. As we bow our heads, close out our time together this morning, I just pray that our hearts would be pricked by a passion to reunite our family. Your family, that as we see people who are your children, who we may not even know, that a burden would be on our heart to make them a part of the 99. We want to be in the business of reuniting you with your children. Thank you for the words of the Bible that just remind us of the direction, the emphasis that our lives can take and the impact that we can have if we just be simply about reuniting the family. Pray that we'd have a wonderful Sabbath afternoon that rejuvenates us to be better men and women for you. In your name, amen.